going forever. Moments go, time runs out. And then it hits you with the pain. Things are great on the way out. Nobody's with you when you're on the way down. You got what you wish for. Is that what you're in?
You're listening to the Gods to Ghosts Volleyball Podcast. This podcast features the one and only Ron Lang. This interview was taken on August 30th, 2018, and is part one of our two-part interview from that date. Over his beach career, Mr. Lang won 50 beach open titles, including three Manhattan Beach Open championships in 65, 66, and 67. And was then inducted into the California Beach Volleyball Association Hall of Fame in 1995. When it comes to his indoor career, he competed in the USVBA Nationals and won three titles. He also competed in the 1964 Olympiad for the USA men's indoor team in Tokyo, Japan, and was inducted into the International Volleyball Hall of Fame in Holyoke in 2005. Let's get started with part one of our interview from August 30th, 2018.
I saw Sinjin, I saw Randy, I saw Havindad, and Karch and Kent. And for my money, Karch was the best player. He could block really well, he passed nails, he could side out all day. He was mentally, you couldn't break him, he didn't make mistakes. And, you know, he was away in the indoors for training in 84 and 88, so he wasn't there a lot of that time. And then when he did dedicate himself to the game, he still, you know, won all those tournaments. And I know compared to you guys who played in 8 or 10 or 12, if you were lucky, a year, you know, he got to play.
Oh, I never played more than 7.
Yeah, so it's all a relative thing, you know. But it sure is something. It's... But well, for my money, Karch was the best.
Yeah, Karch came along at the right time. You know, like I think I said to you that our 64 Olympic team was a sham, but because of the way they picked the team, and not only that, the team was only together 6 weeks before we went to the Olympics, and we had. Roughly half the team hated the other half because we've been competitive for 10 years before that.
Right.
Bitter competitors. So, I'll tell you why I think Selznick ranks on my list higher than all these other guys.
Let's hear it.
Okay, in 1956, Gene came back from the World Tournament is either Rome or Paris. And he was selected first team All-World as a spiker. The first American to receive that honor. And he was already a dominant force on the beach when he came back. So he was a great hitter. Then, when he came back, he wanted to play like the Europeans. So he left Hollywood YMCA, which had O'Hara and Bills and some names you probably don't know. Mm-hmm. But they had been a perennial force at the Nationals, probably never worse than second or third. He left that team and put together a team of, Bernie was on the team. He was 35. Manny Sines at 5'5", was a setter. Jack Backer, who was an A player, was the other setter. And I played opposite Gene. It was my first Nationals. I didn't know anything about the indoor game. And from 1957 to 1964, we played the international system.
Mm-hmm.
But 1958, we played the international system, which meant that you couldn't bring your biggest guy from the backcourt up to the front court to block. So the system that Karch is coaching is a slight derivative of what Gene brought over from Europe. So it's my opinion that Gene, the least credit, that he doesn't get any credit for being really the father, if to pick a term, of the indoor game as it's played today. Now, Gene hit with tremendous power. Dane has an arm like Gene's, real quick and a heavy ball. Gene had a better serve, because Karch's serve was a little jump floater, which wasn't much of anything at all. Gene had a roundhouse. He didn't jump and hit it overhand with a topspin. He just stayed on the ground and snapped the ball. But it was real effective. Gene was a great setter, and he was unparalleled as a defensive player. So, now, I didn't see Karch play in his prime, but I saw him play in a few tournaments when he was over 40, and they had the rally scoring, and all he did was dink, because the deal was you're supposed to block the ball at the net. That's what everybody's thinking is nowadays. You stop the ball at the net. So that's why, you know, in my personal opinion, from what I've seen, I give the edge to Gene. Now, as I've always said, a personal opinion can never be wrong. It's just what I think.
Right.
So, it's, plus, we played under, well, I guess Volleyball Magazine had some comments about Dalhauser and how he's now the most dominant player. And you asked Fred Zulich how he would play him. And I liked his answer. But if he had to play, if Dalhauser had to play under our system, no blocking over, no manicured court, then I think the outcome would not be as everybody would expect. Number one, if Ronnie and I were going to play against Dalhauser, I'm going to serve Dalhauser every single ball. You want to know why?
Because you don't know if he could hold up that long.
You got it.
Just like when Rundle would block.
He's going to block, and he's going to hit. Then we're going to make him do triple duty. And now if you put him at Laguna Beach, where the sand is like quicksand, running up that hill, or State Beach, running up the hill, or Serrano, where there was a definite, if you were 5 feet off the net, you were hitting 8-3, 8-4. Now, he's a big guy. He could still hit the ball. But he's not going to hit the angles that he hits now. Because he's like hitting off a hardwood floor, the way they manicure the court.
Right.
And when he was playing with Todd, they won a tournament in Southern California one time, and they had to come through the loser's bracket. And this was Todd's quote in the paper. We didn't warm up because we wanted to save our energy. We didn't want to get tired. Excuse me, get tired over an hour match?
You were just warming up.
Oh yeah, and you know, if you have three of those long matches in a day, which you would have, the semifinal, the quarterfinals, semis, finals, and a double elimination tournament, you're going to play a lot of volleyball. And then again, if he had to play at Mission Beach or San Diego when it gets windy, he showed at the Olympics this last year that he doesn't do well in the wind. I mean, it broke his game down. Now, so he's at a disadvantage under my rules. I'm at a definite disadvantage under his rules. Smaller court. He's 9 inches tall. He probably jumps higher. Well, there's no question he jumps higher. And I've got a smaller space to hit to. And he doesn't need conditioning. So I give him the advantage over Ronnie and I under those conditions. But we have a weapon that we never had to use. I'd have Ronnie block him all the time. You know, so he's not going to get a free net. And Ronnie can get it pretty high.
Yeah, I've seen the pictures. I didn't realize he could move, jump that high.
Yeah, he's a big jumper. So, I mean, again, it's all speculation and nobody, you're never going to be able to find out. But when someone says, you know, Dalhauser's a guy, do you know that he's only winning 38-39% of the tournaments he plays in?
I didn't see the numbers, but I'm sure, I know you're good at calculating all that stuff. You were the stock.
Well, writer. I got it off BSAN database. And the guy who won the biggest percentage was Selznick. He won 60% of every tournament, all the tournaments he played in. Karsh Kurai only won 44%. You know, and so there aren't any statistics like that. So who would you rather have? Some guy in baseball that hit 220 and he's getting $5 million a year because he can field, or a guy like Ted Williams or Stan Musial who hit 380, 390, 400, who's a better baseball player?
Right. You know?
And if you take, for me, from 1958 to 1968, that 11-year period, I won 70% of the tournaments I played in and didn't play in 64 because of the Olympics.
And your good friend Harry Wilson.
Yeah.
Boo.
And then if you take first, second, or third, because in horse racing, first, second, third, and fourth, but I just figured the numbers first, second, and third. Gene was in first, second, or third place 94% of the time. And Karch, St. John was 72, Mingus is 78, Karch was 74. I was 92. So it pisses Ronnie and I off, all the accolades that these guys get. And I'm not saying they're not good volleyball players, because they are. I'm just saying that the guys that started this whole racket could play period of time, and not like they say in Volleyball Magazine. It was just a fad and a lifestyle, and we weren't that good of athletes.
Do you remember the game or that you played against Mangus when he served a skyball? Or you served a skyball, and it was like 10 feet outside?
And it was coming down on the lady's head?
Yeah, 10 feet out of bounds, right? So what did he do?
It wasn't 10 feet, but it was 5 feet, 6 feet out of bounds.
Yeah.
Sure, I was playing with Butch May against Tommy and Jimmy.
Shamalis
and
Jimmy?
We were in 13-11. We were in the loser's bracket. Oh, and Butch May is somebody you ought to talk to, too.
I know he gave birth to a heck of a woman's player.
Yeah, well, he didn't give birth, but he was part of the process.
Or sired. Yeah. Well, thanks for clarifying.
He's playing with Shamalis, and Mingus were playing against Butchie and I. And I served a skyball. Now, I didn't have a great skyball, but no question it was going to bounce out of bounds. And it was coming right down on this gal's head who had a baby in her hand, in her arms. And he reached up and caught it before it hit her. I said, point. He said, what do you mean? I said, well, you touched it. He said, but it was going to hit this girl on the head. I said, it's a point. You're supposed to let the ball bounce. Well, that did him, and they never got another point.
You taught him well.
And he talks about that a lot.
Oh, he loves that. He loves the first time and him and Shamalis came up and played against you guys on the A court and tested themselves, the Young Lions, against the ruling Lions.
Well, Ronnie and I were after them for quite some time to come up and play against us. Because they're down on the B court, and they're beating everybody down there. And Ronnie and I both said to them, you got to come up and play us. Now, we're beating better players than they're beating, and we're doing the same thing. We're beating everybody we play. And I bet you we cajoled them for 3 or 4 months before they came onto the court. And then I did the 8-0 next, But my opinion of that is, taught him a lesson. He got some grit after that. And he had a lot of grit for the rest of his career.
Absolutely. I mean, he hated to lose so badly that he... who better could he have competed against than you guys to teach him that? And you in particular, and then Von Hagen with his dedication to the sport and fitness.
Well, I told... I 2 years ago, SC opened up 3 sand courts on their campus. And they invited me down to be the kind of the marshal. And I said, they played 4-man. And I spoke to them briefly, and I told them, play as much volleyball as you can, and play against as many good players as you can. Always play up. Because if you play down, you're never going to learn anything.
Von Hagen said you used to get frustrated when the... when you guys had a tournament coming up, like on the weekend, and some other team that would come up to challenge you on the A court wasn't any good, you didn't even wait to say the 8-0. You said it before the game even started. 8-0. And then you'd thrash them like a sock on a dryer.
I don't remember doing that, but I don't doubt that I would have done it. See, because I felt... And if I got a little bit better a player when I first started playing, which was pretty quick, I always felt if I beat you, if you played me 10 times on the beach during the middle of the week, and I beat you every time, that if I drew you in the tournament, you wouldn't expect to win. because I beat you all the time on the weekdays.
Just like you told Stephus at that dinner that night. You're like, well, who cares? You're out to beat him and win. And I think he took that to heart, too.
Well, he had a bad reputation because he wasn't friendly. You know, he didn't pal around with all the beach players. I told him when he told me that, I said, so what? You know, I lived about a mile off the, a mile from Serrano Beach, and nobody knew where I lived, including Von Hagen. I had an apartment up there on 10th Street, and 1st Street and Cliffs were, past the 1st Street was the beach. And nobody knew where I lived. But, you know, I just, it was a business as far as I was concerned.
And your business is winning.
You know, a business that I thoroughly enjoyed, but it was a business.
Oh, Von Hagen said he was afraid of you at first.
He was a what?
Afraid of you at first. Because he didn't want to make a mistake.
In fact, I was after him probably for probably a year to play with me. Because I was tired of Selznick not putting forth an effort. I mean, if we played at State Beach, he always wanted to win State Beach because that was his court.
Right.
But, you know, we ended up in the loser's bracket. And we lost to teams in the winner's bracket that 3 years before we wiped off the map. And then we get in the loser's bracket, and he didn't like to lose, though. He brought his A game. And we came to the loser's bracket and won tournaments four or five times. Lose the first round. I remember in Laguna Beach, my first tournament with him, with Gene, was 58 at Santa Barbara. And we get to the finals and we play a guy named Barry Brown, who is 6'5", basketball player from Stanford, and Mike O'Hara, two guys that are not known, they could pound the ball, but they were not known for being able to pass and set. We played him in a gale, and those two guys passed every ball and set every ball on the net. So they beat us. The next time we play them, we're in the loser's bracket, and the loser's going to get fifth place because we lost the first round. But we beat him that time. But, you know, playing with Gene, there were times he just didn't care. Now, he wanted to win eventually, but, you know, he... The Laguna Beach match that we lost the first round, I gave him a perfect set, and he dinked it. And both guys, you must have thought it was a $1,000 bill because they were there so quickly, either one of them could have gotten it. See, that's what we're now in the loser bracket.
Yeah, that would be frustrating. I don't blame you.
But, he was a great partner, and we covered, we always had three quarters of the court covered. There's a picture that Dane's posted a couple of times. We're playing, I know who the hitter is, I'm not sure where it was, a guy by the name of Mike Higer, who was a good jumper, and his partner was a guy named Henry Hitchcock, and he's hitting the ball cross court. And Gene and I are both moving almost in synchronization. Left foot in front, you know, I mean, we're both going to the spot where the ball's going to be hit. court all the time. So.
I heard you used to just put yourself right in the position where you think the person was going to hit the ball, and you didn't care if it went off your face, your head.
I said to Fred last night, because I talked to him for about an hour, I said, I want to mention something to you that you said about my defense that I've never heard anybody say. That I parked myself in the sand where I thought the hitter was going to be. And the hit was going to be. And I, with all the big hitters, all the guys that could really pound the ball, I was always down on the sand. Now, if there's a hitter that I probably wouldn't be down on the sand against Mingus because he wasn't a heavy hitter. I wouldn't be down on the sand against David Boardwell because he wasn't a heavy hitter.
Why'd you have to be down in the sand? Because it would help absorb the impact of a Bergman or a Shimalis hit?
I define defense. Defense starts with where the passer passes a serve. To give you an example, Chris Morrow is somebody I'll talk to also. Chris was playing in the Manhattan Open against Bobby Jackson. And I forget who Bobby Jackson's partner was. And I told Chris to serve the ball to Bobby's left hand, to the left side of his body. And he said, why? I said, because that's going to put him in this, more towards the center of the net, and it's going to cut down the angles that he can hit. Because he can't go back down the line with his arm swing. So, and I used to serve Mingus when I was 33, 34. I liked to serve him to his right hand, shoulder height. He didn't pass that ball well. But defense starts when you serve the ball. And where you go is depending upon wind conditions, where the set's coming from, and how you approach the ball. If you're a left side player and have your left shoulder more than parallel to the net, you're not going to hit the ball back down the line. If the ball's coming from the backcourt, you're not going to hit the ball down the line with power. So it's funny. It's like hitting a fastball. You have a split second to make the decision.
So you better be in position.
Yeah. So, as I think I said when we talked last time, you may be in position every time and not dig a ball. Because it's coming pretty fast. But you only have to dig a couple of balls to have a real impact on a player.
If you had to give your top three pieces of advice to someone playing defense on the beach, what would they be right now?
Under today's rules, first thing I would say is you don't have to block every ball. Because there are times when a bad pass has been made and all you're doing is freeing up the whole court for the hitter to shoot it in. Even if he's 6-7 feet back, if you can see from his body language where he's going to hit it, if you go stand in the right spot, you got a chance. If you're standing at the net, the guy's got half the court to dink to, and half the time you hit the guy's hands and it goes askew. And the next thing I would tell somebody to do is every now and then, if guy's got a set, and it's a pretty good set, and you're up there ready to block him, watch his eyes. The moment he takes his eyes off of you, the blocker, once or twice, dink the ball when he thinks you're up. And it's an easy play for you. See, I don't think these guys think like that. Their only thought is to stop the ball at the net. I also would tell players to block a player not just to stuff the ball, but to force him to hit an angle. In other words, force him to hit the ball cross court to your partner. If your partner's standing there waiting for the hit, he could still run down the dink over your head, over the blocker's head. So that was more than three.
And last time I interviewed you, I felt horrible. The best part of that whole interview was, well, everything was amazing, but was you talking about the best hitters you ever faced. Do you mind rehashing on that, please?
Sure. Selznick has got to be one of the best hitters because he always stayed behind the ball and he always approached the ball in the same way. So if you moved on Gene, he always played with guys who set with their hands. So if you set with your hands, if you were to look at me and I was setting you and you're playing the left and I'm at the net with my hands up, you can envision, you can see my hands and you can see the defensive players. If I'm bumping the ball, same situation. If I'm bumping the ball, you have to follow the ball from the practically the ground up to the set. You follow?
Yep.
Okay. So, Gene played with mostly players when he was good, who sat with their hands. So he approached the set all the time, the same way. So he could see the entire court. So if you're not blocking, and even if you are blocking, there's always a spot that's open. So he would be one of the best hitters. And he could hit with precision and power. And I thought Freddie's portrayal of his hitters was very accurate. Some guys hit big angles straight down, but they didn't hit with power. And some guys hit with power, but they get back off the net, they weren't effective. But they were, like Shamalis, you get Shamalis 4 feet off the net. No telling where it's going to go. Maybe in the net or out to 2 feet. I mean, his hitting percentage from 4 feet off the net wasn't that great. Now, O'Hara was a great hitter. He could hit, he had all kinds of range. Hit from well back in the court. He probably, as Gene never did, he probably never turned his back on the net to hit the ball over. He always jumped up and took a controlled swing. The closer to the net, the more power he hit the ball with. But he always was able to move the ball around. Ernie Sorara pounded the ball. Really hit it hard.
Is it true that he broke a girl's arm indoors that kept trying to block him, and she blocked him twice in a row, and on the third time he cracked her arm?
Say that again?
There's a story that I read about in, I think it was in the Sands of Time, that Ernie played like doubles indoors at one point in time. It might have been an exhibition. Guy-girl versus guy-girl, and some female player blocked him twice in a row, and he went at her a third time, and he fractured her arm.
I don't know if that's true or fiction.
All right.
I can't imagine any girl could get high enough to block him. But he was a real power hitter. Keith Erickson was a real power hitter.
Did he pound a ball that didn't go over the Sereno wall, but it hit it on a bounce?
Probably.
There's a rumor that happened. I heard Shamalis hit one over it, though.
Could be. But the object is not to hit the ball so hard, it's to put it down. Kurt Kilgore pounded the ball. He's a left-hander. And he could hit the ball. Guys like Butch May hit the ball accurately. He didn't pound the ball. He just moved it around a lot. Von Hagen could hit the ball pretty good, but he was most effective because he moved the ball around a lot. And he could hit from back off the net. The fact that you just jump facing the net puts all kinds of pressure on the defense. Because if I turn my back on to just to bounce the ball over the net, you know you're going to get a good pass. But if I jump to hit the ball, you know I could hit a cross court down the middle, on the line, or dink it. You know, I've got more options. And Ronnie was really good at, along with Greg Lee, controlled the ball. I controlled the ball really well. Henry Bergman and Larry Rundle controlled the ball, and both those guys hit with power. Larry Rundle was a real heavy, hit the ball real quick and hard, and Henry pounded it. But we served Henry.
I love when I ask you what it was like to dig Henry the first time. I don't know if people heard this because I don't know if I included it in our first interview because we had those recording problems. You know what your answer was? You said there's no special feeling. That's a Ron Lang answer.
It's
like doing the laundry on Sunday afternoon, Scott. What else do you want to know?
It's part of the game. It's just like if you serve an ace, you know, I mean, we wouldn't be clapping hands and jumping around if somebody served an ace. I remember we played, Ronnie and I played, Matt Gage hit the ball good. Matt Gage was a good, real good hitter. And I know I'm leaving some people out, but the really hard hitters are not the thing that wins you tournaments. It's ball control, which is passing and setting.
Like the 68 Manhattan.
Yeah.
Zulich said he didn't even know what he knew about the sport. But he goes, I know what I witnessed that day was magical.
Yeah. I mean, we both played, both teams played perfect. And Rundle has said to me, we should have called it a tie. And it's my fault that we didn't call it a tie. Because I said, the tournament director came up and said to us, I'm willing to call it a tie. What do you think? And Ronnie looked at me and said, what do you think? I said, I want to play. Well, it was already like 8:30. favor, or 9-6 or whatever, I said to him, I can't see to set the ball. I remember it was 13-11 our favor, and I literally could hardly see the net. And Ronnie passed the last ball straight up, and I didn't move. Because I never saw where it went.
So. He said he saw you with your face buried in the sand after that, or something to that effect.
Pardon me?
They said they saw you, like, with your face buried in the sand after that match, too, or something to that effect.
Yeah, I was pretty tired. And I just wanted to be left alone. I just laid in the sand for a while, and then I got up and went back to my apartment.
This concludes part one of our two-part interview with Ron Lang from August 30th of 2018. Thanks for tuning in. I'd like to quickly give thanks to the musicians that we use for our podcast. The opening track is Rainin' from the band Sponge off the album Rotting Pinata. The closing song that you're going to hear shortly is from the band Magna Carta Cartel. Song title is That It's Already Too Late off the album Good Morning Restrained. Please make sure to visit our website, godstoghosts.com. and our Facebook page, Gods to Ghosts Volleyball. Thanks for listening. Stay tuned for part two.